Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, Sean Luke. I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are just a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Little yawn there, Adam. You all right?
No, I wasn't. Tired? I wasn't yawning. I was. I carry a lot of tension in my jaw.
Oh,
I don't know if you know that.
Because of bruxism.
I mean, that's a thing that only happens for me at night. But a lot of times, like if I choose to be present in any given moment, I will notice that tightness, and I'll just kind of try to stretch it out.
Oh,
I'll do it before a show sometimes.
I always think of that as just being you showing me your fangs to intimidate me.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of mental tortures I deploy, like just before we hit record, try to get you off balance.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's what you want in a co-host, I'm sure.
I always go out on stage having just been told that you've got my back out there.
The back is just where I put the kick me sign.
Yeah. I've got a target on your back is what you really mean.
You saying it's not like that for you and Dan Kennedy? He's not constantly sticking a finger in your eye?
Dan Kennedy and I have very complementary neuroses. He's a fear-based man, and I'm a guilt and shame-based man. So
wow,
we just really walk on eggshells around each other.
That must be nice.
Yeah, it's great.
One of these days, we'll find a compatible co-host for you, man.
Oh,
it'll
yeah.
happen.
In the meantime, we've got some mail that has come in to the Greatest Generation podcast.
Yeah, is that going to soften the blow a little bit? Opening up some nice gifts from our viewers?
I hope so. Yeah, this stuff is all stuff that came before the end of 2021.
Oh,
and,
wow.
If you're listening to this and you're interested in sending stuff in, and already have a P.O. box written down, chances are it has changed since last you got it.
Yeah.
We moved our P.O. box so that it wasn't all the way across town from both of us.
Weird. Why would we do that?
I don't know. I don't know why we made that decision, but we made that decision.
Uh-huh.
I continued to have it closer to my house because your wife has made it very clear to me that she will not brook you being the person receiving the bulk of the mail anymore.
Who's more hostile to the idea of you and this show, me or her? Some days it's hard to tell.
Yeah, well, she's never told me she had my back, so.
Oh, yeah, that's how you know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So I know I'm in trouble with her.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got a bunch of mail here, and I was just saying that to let people know that if you would like to send something into the program, reach out to Bill Tilly again to get a new P.O. box, because the old one is no more.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
We also didn't fire up Twitch this time. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, those who are watching the show right now live will get this experience. We're not doing the Twitch this time, but I think you will delight in our descriptions of what's happening if you're consuming the audio-only medium of our show right
We're gonna
now.
We're going to paint a word picture that is as good as any streaming show, better than any streaming show, let's be honest.
Yeah, lots better.
Our first package here is from Justice and Peach of Denton, Texas, and it's to us.
Denton, Texas, home of the Centromatic band that I like very much.
Justice and Peach is a jewelry and handcrafts Etsy store. Gentlemen, I've been listening since y'all were twice weekly, and I love the show more with each passing year. Voyager was my comfort food during some of the worst times of my life, and getting to hear it with y'all now when things are going surprisingly well is a true delight. Please enjoy these handmade beaded bracelets in Command Red, Engineering Gold, and Science Officer Blue, or Aqua? I thought your wives might enjoy a pretty intersection of interests, or that y'all might. Hit me up if you want a fourth. Drusilla. Wow.
Can you imagine liking our show the longer you listen to it? That's amazing to hear.
These are really cool.
Wow, look at those. Yeah.
These are beaded bracelets that I think that if you wore them together really read as the Star Trek colors, but if you wore one of them individually, I think might just read as bracelet.
Oh, that's fun.
Thank you, Drusilla. These are great. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing your name correctly, but if folks are interested in checking this stuff out, there is an Etsy. It's etsy.com/shop/justiceandpeach. All right, we got another one here. This is a flat manila envelope. I'm guessing comic book, just based on what I'm feeling through the packaging. And this one comes from Benjamin H. of Manassas Park, Virginia. A very short note. It just says, found another comic for you.
That's great.
Literally all it says. And it's a Star Trek comic. It's a Star Trek Boldly Go comic.
Hey, that's one of the newer ones.
Yeah. Written by Mike Johnson with art by Tony Chastain.
That's one of those IDW comics. IDW puts out a lot of Star Trek.
Yeah, and it looks like it is Kelvin timeline likenesses on the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, I can't wait to read it. Maybe we'll do like a bonus episode about this comic. Who knows?
I like that idea.
All right. This next one is from Jackson H. of Spring, Texas. A lot of Texas in the mailbag today.
How about that?
This is an envelope with a card. Let's see. Happy holidays, Ben and Adam. You bring laughter into my home each year, and I wanted to brighten your season too. H-W-I-M-H got... Oh, he who is my husband, I'm guessing, got me these Star Trek tarot card stickers, and I passed the ones I thought matched you along. Adam, Worf, for you, because you expend purpose and energy in keeping emotions, thoughts, and feelings close to the vest. But that card means you have a warrior's heart and should not fear anything, even letting people know how you really feel. The people who love you are warriors too and will protect you. Ben, Q is for you because he is super intelligent, clever, and strong, but in his core, he is searching for acceptance and uses his attributes to set himself apart so he won't be hurt. But the card says you are already loved and accepted despite your idiosyncrasies, so you can relax and revel and the affirmations of the folks who care for you, even if they aren't as strong or clever as you are.
Wow.
Trust the tarot, boys, and have a wonderful new year. I hope to see you on tour if you come to the Jackass State of the Union, Texas. XOXO, Jackson. P.S. Forgot to say, congrats on your puppy, Adam.
And hey.
Ancient as I am, I knew when you said her name on air that she was named for the most badass sci-fi hero, Ripley.
That's right.
Even your puppy is a warrior.
Fucking A.
Wow. So Jackson has included some delightful tarot stickers for us.
I don't know much about tarot cards, and by that I mean I don't know anything at all about them, but is it bad luck to bust up a deck? Is it like a deck of cards where you'd never want to take out like the four of diamonds and give that away? Like, does that render your tarot card deck unusable going forward?
What? I don't know. These are stickers also, so I think they're just stickers that are in the style of a tarot deck. But I would love to see the full deck of Trek Tarot.
That's pretty fun. And really nice sentiment also. Like that's a thoughtful pairing of those cards to us.
I'm a little concerned at how well Jackson seems to know us.
Jackson makes the case for Texas. I can't think of Texas without thinking of beef rib, which is something you and I had a couple nights ago together in L.A., the L.A.-style beef rib. But, God, That beef rib in Texas.
Yeah.
Hard to beat.
That's a special thing.
Yeah.
The next one here is the Friends of DeSoto Community Cookbooks from the Greatest Exo Cooks.
Awesome. Look at that. They turned out great.
It looks like there's one for you and one for me. Of course, Mary, Tan Ying, and Jillian compiled these recipes, and you and I both submitted recipes to this, and we wrote a little foreword as well. This came out great.
That's cool. Excited to get into that.
Yeah. So I think that by the time we're broadcasting this, sales of the Greatest Exo Cook book may be over. But the proceeds go to the Hunger Project, and I think they raised quite a bit of money for the Hunger Project, which is really cool. I love seeing Friends of DeSoto putting together a big project and also thinking about people in need in the process.
Yeah, if you're going to do a thing, you might as well do some good at the same time. And that was the thinking here. Pretty great stuff.
Our next package here is to you and me from something called Mod in Lexington, Kentucky. Here it says, "Hey, gents, this isn't directly Trek-related, but you may recall I gave you guys some of my books ancient eons ago and did a Priority One a while back. I have a new book out. I don't know. Perhaps you might enjoy them." From Stephen Notley. And what we have is a couple of Bob the Angry Flower books. Bob the Angry Flower is a comic by Stephen Notley. And he included a book for you and a book for me in here.
I was just thinking about Bob the Angry Flower because I happened upon that book when I was going through my bookshelf lately.
Does my memory serve me in that we met Stephen at a Max Fun meetup in Seattle, Washington?
That's where I remember it happening, yeah.
Yeah. He was a really nice guy, and these books are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on the new book. I hope folks will go out and check it out. It's called An Excellent Use of One's Time, is the title of Stephen's new book.
Everyone's publishing books lately, Ben. Print isn't dead.
It's really catching. Who said it was? Show me that motherfucker.
I mean, Egon Spengler said it was?
Yeah. Another Texas package here, Adam. It's from Moss of Coppell, Texas.
Does it smell like beef rib?
Vaguely. I don't think anything gets through that post office without coming in contact with at least one beef rib, right?
I went to an elementary school that was several blocks away from a factory that made pet food.
Oh, wow.
And, like, you'd go out to recess, and the smell was just heavy in the air of, like, dog food, dry dog food specifically.
My mom worked at an elementary school that was a few blocks away from the Mother's Cookies factory.
Yeah.
And in the afternoon, the air around there just smelled like chocolate. It was absolutely amazing.
I did a video shoot out in Philadelphia near the Hershey's factory, and it was the same effect out there. The reason I brought it up is, like, I wonder how many parts of Texas you can find yourself in that just smell like barbecue all the time.
We have a card here, a holiday card. It says, "Dear Adam and Ben, I am hopeful that my macarons have arrived in one piece rather than in shards." Oh no, this is a perishable gift that has been sitting here for probably too long. The filling is supposed to be cherry almond buttercream. Shelf stable, of course. Wow. Okay. "Your podcast and learning to make macarons have helped keep me sane during a chaotic 2021, and I have made so many wonderful friends along the way. All thanks to you guys. Can't wait to hear you guys get deeper into Voyager. I recently rewatched the show and fervently wish somebody like Catherine Janeway had been able to lead us through uncertain times." Not Chakotay, though. Seriously, fuck that guy.
Wow.
"Anyway, enjoy the macarons, and hope you all make it to Dallas on tour. Brian Moss."
Shots fired at Chakotay, a character I thought had done a fairly good job at redeeming himself over the course of the season.
Does he have another heel turn to come? I don't know.
I mean, this letter's got me wondering. Hey, let's see those macarons.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to shout out Brian's Instagram. It's The Obsessive Macaronist on IG. This is very well wrapped. I'm not concerned that these are sharded. There is a little bit of what looked like sprinkles that made it to the outside of the container. Oh, they are slightly sharded.
Wow.
Should I?
Yeah, you got to take one to the dome.
Guinea pig that's, myself? Yeah.
That's the tradition whenever we do a Code 47.
It is. All right. Oh, man. Edible gold on the top?
I like how both halves are look like a different flavor.
Well, they're like, they're nebula swirled. They look great.
Wow.
All right, I'm going to try this.
Ben is taking a bite. He's taken half of the macaroni to the dome.
I'm just kidding. It's delicious.
And that's, whenever you go out to eat with Ben, that's the sound he makes when he really likes a thing. It's why we ask to be seated in a corner or out in a patio.
Yeah. Is there a chef's table that we could do this? Because the beef rib is really going to appeal to Ben, and it's going to get ugly. This, I have to say, is, I mean, it's not like getting a macaron, like, fresh out of the display case at the mall macaron station, but it has stood up surprisingly well.
I only ever see these in airports.
I was one time in the airport in Paris, in the brand new terminal, in the height of the summer.
You can smoke in the airport in Paris, right?
Maybe. It was not being air conditioned. It was so hot in there. And I just heard this like very fancy French woman in French say like, "There's no air conditioning. It's a little bit primitive, is it not?"
That's kind of the perfect airport food, I think.
Yeah.
The macaron is pretty great.
Nope, it's not going to upset your seatmates when you bring a macaron on board the plane.
It's not going to mess up your fingers. It's not going to smell bad. It's poppable in a nice way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, our last package here is from John G. of Brooklyn, New York. It's to us. It's got a what looks like a crocodile drawn on the outside. Dear Mrs. Uxbridge and Shimoda, whichever of you is which, Greatest Gen has been my primary soundtrack these past few years, during which I've been writing and drawing children's graphic novel series, Investigators. It's about two alligators named Mango and Brash who wear vests and solve crimes. I've been a Trek fan all my life, as well as a cartoonist who's a little bit embarrassed to be a cartoonist, as evidenced by this printout of the cover of a Trek parody comic I did as a kid shortly after TNG came out. For supplemental reading material, I've included the first four Investigators books. The books have a myriad of puns and wordplay and a sprinkling of potty humor. Bashir may not be a first officer, but he's number one in our bladders. I mean, hearts! So I think that they'll appeal to your McLaughlin group.
Mm.
Oh, boy. John, that is a strained pun, if ever there was one.
One of the things I frequently ask myself on the show, and I don't often say it out loud, but I'll definitely say it to myself, is it in joke? Sometimes I don't know.
I sometimes like to just suggest putting just the tip of the joke in.
Right.
You know. The books are, of course, supposedly aimed towards six-year-olds. And to the best of my knowledge, neither of you have children. But what my theory presupposes is maybe you know people that do? If you don't want to be stuck with the books, hopefully there is a slick back or two you could pass them off to. Anyways, your pod has kept me company while I've been space buttholed up like a hermit making these books, and I wanted to send you a token of appreciation. Thanks, Ben and Adam. Sincerely, John Patrick Green.
This is a much better childhood drawn comic than mine ever looked like. Mine did not look good.
Yeah, my childhood comics have been put to shame. And we got four of these books here, the Investigators. And
look at that.
These look really, really fun. I definitely got to pass these off to some of the kids in my life who are age appropriate for it once I read them myself.
Yeah, you should definitely like hang outside of a playground giving stuff away to the kids there. Mm-hmm. It'd be a nice thing to
do.
Hey,
I've got some macarons that, I mean, they're a little busted up, but they taste great. And I've got some kids' literature, too. Any takers?
I predict that's going to go great.
Yeah. Well, I'll do my best to remember to take Instagram photos of all these things so Bill Tilly can throw them up on the Greatest Trek Instagram account.
Good call.
But thank you so much to everyone who sent stuff in. This is a great haul and a lot of books, which is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks so much for everyone's generosity when they send stuff into the P.O. box. And nothing in there looks like it would kill Bill. Which is, of course, the first rule of P.O. Boxing when you're dealing with Greatest Generation. Right. Don't send us anything you wouldn't want Bill to open.
Yeah, and nothing that you wouldn't feel okay about Bill having to eat, specifically.
Right. Bill, the official food taster and card daddy of Greatest Gen.
Yeah. Do you want to get into today's episode of Star Trek : Voyager?
Can't wait, Ben. It is a weird little episode. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 3, Episode 10, Warlord.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
Where we open on a fairly grotesque scene of torture on the holodeck where Paris and Kim are forced to watch Neelix get a foot job by a Talaxian female.
Yeah. The long-rumored Tarantino Star Trek movie is not the first time he's directed something for Star Trek.
You just really got an axe to grind with
gotta ring that bell.
Quentin Tarantino, huh? What did he ever do to you besides make great films constantly?
He made great films that feature extended scenes where I have to look at feet.
I don't have a problem with that at all. What I do have a problem with is Neelix's feet specifically. He's holding court describing his preferred brand of vacation to Paris and Kim.
Yeah.
And kind of suggesting it to the rest of the crew.
Yeah, he's recreated Talaxian Risa in the holodeck, and Paris and Kim are there trying to humor him.
Yeah, it's nice.
But they have a lot of ideas about, you know, punch-ups that they'd like to pitch for this holodeck simulation.
It can be hard to agree on a recreational activity among friends, let alone co-workers. This is like three people trying to decide where the company picnic's going to be.
I had a friend tell me about like a workplace environment that he was in where they often made jokes because Hooters in Manhattan was like right downstairs from where they worked, and they would always joke about, let's get lunch at Hooters today.
Uh-huh.
And one day they actually did it, and it like was a source of great regret for him and everyone that was involved, just because it was like such an uncomfortable thing to do with work friends. That's not who you take to Hooters.
You really don't want to eat finger foods with work friends. The wing as a snack is just like, it's like eating spaghetti on a date or something. It's hard to look professional when you got a napkin tucked in your neck.
Yeah.
Eating hot wings.
Yeah, but
that's clearly the only problem I'm seeing in enjoying a meal at Hooters, right?
That's it. Yeah, you nailed it, Adam.
Kim and Paris, as you said, have notes. And these notes absolutely shit all over Neelix's vision, which I know this episode does not want us to linger in this part, but like, it really papers over Neelix's cultural interests utterly. He's like trying to make this a Talaxian thing. And Kim and Paris are like, no, man, this needs to be like an all-inclusive sandals resort with like a buffet and steel drum band vibe.
Loosen it up.
Yeah, right.
You think it's not going to go over well, but Neelix loves it.
He's like, wow, like, we have it twisted on Talax. We are not doing it right when we cut loose.
We need a much taller drinking vessel.
Yeah. We need hooves. The beverages they replicate are probably as close as canonical Trek will ever come to a hoof drink.
These glasses are fun, but they're definitely the kind of glasses where if you don't use the straw, and it is strongly recommended that you do, but if you don't use the straw and you tip that thing back, it's going all over you.
You better have a washable shirt on.
Yeah. And shorts. Like all that ice is going down the front of your shorts like is bound to happen at any cabana.
Or, yeah, yeah. Or wear a mesh shirt like Harry does.
Right.
Harry has the computer bring in some
bikini ladies from his beach volleyball simulation. Paris brings in some steel drum guys from Earth's Caribbean region. I think he describes it as.
They change the clothing of the bartender.
Yeah. This looks like a pretty fun tropical hang until Neelix starts dancing with these ladies. And then it just doesn't seem that fun anymore.
It's silly as hell, but God, Ethan Phillips is rocking these slipper feet in a way that could look super dumb and difficult, but it looks like they're a part of him.
It does.
He does a good job with this dance.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, the thing that shocked me about this moment was that it was the fade out to theme. It's like the show saying, "You're not going to want to see what happens next." You know, like who is waiting through the credits and the commercials to find out what happens?
There's no hook here.
Voyager has had so many good episodes toward the end of season 2 and the beginning of season 3 that it's like, let's start to fuck with them a little bit.
Yeah.
I challenge you to come back for the rest of this episode.
You really got to want to stick around. And that way, maybe this is the most greatest gen cold open we've ever seen.
It's the first time Star Trek did a Marin on one of its canonical shows.
All senior officers, report to the bridge.
Kim and Paris get called away, just like Kes does from her quarters after the theme. Kes is being called to Six Bay because on the bridge, we see on the view screen that there is a ship on fire out there. And Ensign Kim's deep V really chills out the stress of this moment, I thought. Like, how seriously could I possibly take this?
Yeah.
Well, he is luxuriating in his comfort.
He's really chilling the most. They have to bring the ship within sort of dangerous range of the ship that they're trying to rescue because its warp core is critical and they're going to have to get close enough to beam the survivors off of it that when it blows, it could potentially cause them damage. But we actually see this happen. Like they run the transport, the banger gets dropped on Voyager, and like before the ship even stops shaking, Tuvok is like, "No, that was fine. All major systems are undamaged."
And then in a scene straight out of the last episode, they all retire to the mess hall and they're clinking glasses, celebrating another successful rescue.
Down in Six Bay, it's real like ER vibes. A lot of running around, trying to fix these people up. There is one person on the slab that is in a greater amount of pain than anyone else.
A pain that the doc knows well, right? Like, the doc knows about being burned.
Yeah. The lady is, like, saying, like, you've got to save my husband. Did you clock the actor that played Tieran, the guy that's dying?
No.
So this is Lee McCloskey, who also played the murderer Dax host on DS9.
Oh, cool. He looks so different in this.
Yeah, yeah. Does not look the same at all. But I read that he also went to Juilliard where he was roommates with Kelsey Grammer.
What the fuck? I swear, you stick a couple of pipe cleaners and a goatee on that guy, he is unrecognizable.
Absolutely.
And I'm talking about Kelsey Grammer.
Right, yes. No, yeah. So they try and fail to save this dude. And the wife is in tears, and Kes, very comforting, gives her a great big comforting hug to try and make her feel better about the passing of her husband, who, like, they just didn't have enough time. Like, their medical interventions were incompatible with his biology. There was nothing they could do.
I was grabbed by the moment, I mean, much like Nori is grabbed by Kes, in that, like, oh, is this what she wants? Like, RSVP Taryn, but like, boy, Kes is really up on the stranger. I mean, it banks on the knowledge that you have about Kes. Kes knows what Nori wants.
Yeah, and also in retrospect, like,
Kes has got Taryn in her at this point.
Right, yeah. We don't know that watching it the first time, but
no.
It did cross my mind, like, what if this is an alien species that does not have a hugging element of their culture, you know?
Yeah.
Ugh, what are you doing?
In the aftermath, Nori and the other guy, Aiden, describe their circumstances to Janeway, like what they were doing out there on that ship, that they were attacked. Yeah. They were in like a trading corridor that is very popular with the space pirates in that area. And they're extremely grateful for the help.
Aiden is a prominent physician, and Nori is a cousin of the Autark, who's the leader of their society. So they were kind of prime targets, and Janeway's kind of getting this information from them in her ready room where she's, you know, pouring them cups of,
vegetable broth,
I presume.
Yep. The diplomatic broth flows freely in this scene.
She's going to get them to Alari, which is their home planet, and is really looking forward to meeting the Autark. We cut back down to Talaxian Risa. Sort of feels like a scene where the show is saying, like, this isn't totally sexist. There's also female gaze here. Look at this hunk that BLT had the computer create.
What this holodeck program presupposes is, what would Bradley Whitford look like if he were an absolute unit?
I always wondered that.
Yeah. And that is BLT's type.
I would have voted for Obama for a third term if I could.
Great program, Neelix.
Absolute unit Bradley Whitford wears the sort of briefs style bathing suit that has vent holes out the side. leaving barely anything to the imagination.
He really would be right at home in a pants optional gay nightclub situation with those briefs.
How does Star Trek get away with this level of nudity? It's amazing.
I don't know.
We got so much underboob a couple episodes ago, and now we get side schlong, basically.
Yeah. This is a deep V that shows dick neck.
This is definitely not a costume they auctioned off, right? Or is it?
Just imagine the smell.
Yeah. There's a prop out there for everyone.
I guess so. Neelix radios to Kes, who is a little bit late for a date that they had planned, and she is off in the transporter bay giving a tour to their Alari guests. And they've never encountered a transporter before, but she's kind of like putting their minds at ease.
You can tell something's wrong with Kes in this scene because she describes the transporter as completely safe and never having any issues with her or anyone she loves. She's already forgotten about Tuvix.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit weird that she went out of her way to say that the back of your head will look totally normal after you materialize.
Neelix is like, hey, you blew off our lunch. And this causes Kes to blow off her transporter room tour. A little bit of blow off transference.
Yeah, she heads back to the holodeck and is having a, you know, lunch in paradise, but she's listless and headachy and not really engaged.
This is what happens when you get a salad on vacation. Like, it always seems like a good option normally.
Right.
But when you're on vacation, sometimes it can be fun to splurge.
Live it up, you know?
I mean, that's what super jacked Bradley Whitford should be eating. Kes should be eating a lunch of ice cream sandwiches here.
Leave the responsible choices to Unit Whitford.
Right.
Neelix would like her to, quote-unquote, go sailing with him.
Is sailing code for broom closet?
Yeah, I think that's code for broom closet. He's blowing right past the fact that she's already said that she had a headache.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, headache is code for I don't want to, quote-unquote, go sailing. And listen, like, never run through the stop sign, I'd say.
Right, yeah.
If you want to go sailing and your special person doesn't want to go sailing, doesn't feel like it for any reason, it's fine. Plenty of nice days ahead.
Let the headache subside, or let whatever it is that the headache is an excuse for subside. Be there for them.
Maybe you go sailing by yourself. Maybe you start cranking the spinnaker out on your own private lake, you know?
Cranking something.
This is typical of you, Neelix.
Neelix does not follow this advice. He does blow through the first stop sign.
Yeah.
And this really locks in a dynamic. This is Kes sort of being determined to have a lover's quarrel, despite Neelix being like almost
impossibly reasonable at every turn as this conversation progresses.
But this scene also pays off a feeling we've had about Kes and Neelix for 3.5 seasons. Like, if you were to transpose this reaction from Kes to the beginning of the season, or the middle of season 2, or the beginning of season 1, I would argue it's totally welcome and justified.
Yeah. Like, her case is basically like, you're the only person I've ever been with. I need time to, like, find myself, time to think. And the lovers' quarrel winds up with Kes kind of unilaterally announcing that they need to take a break.
I think Jennifer Lean is who you're made to really pay attention to here for what she's doing. But yeah. Ethan Phillips' performance was the one that really affected me. Like,
yeah.
Ethan Phillips is made to be a clown most of the time, but his sad clown here is really affecting, and well done by him.
His sad clown is great. Also, the way he conducts himself in this confrontation is really aspirational, because he does not get defensive. He comes from a place of what's best for you at every turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he's really selfless, and in a way that, like, I don't think he's always been written, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this was a great scene for him, both as a character and as an actor.
If you want to be in a broom closet with someone, set them free. If they don't come back to your broom closet, it was never meant to be.
Hey, what's this sailor doing in here with us?
How many broom closets does the sailboat have?
I thought you said you wanted to go sailing. We need a sailor if we're going to go sailing.
I'm sorry.
So Janeway's log tells us that they've made it to planet Ellari, and they're ready to do the passenger drop. And in the transporter room, we prepare to bring aboard a representative from the Ellari. And as soon as this person beams aboard, they are welcomed by Janeway, Tuvok, and Kes, who whips out a phaser and kills this person immediately, along with the ensign running the transporter.
Fucking brutal. I didn't know that you could fire an unauthorized phaser aboard a starship, but apparently you can.
Yeah, and they changed the rules.
Janeway slams Kes up against the wall. Somebody drops a Kirk chop on her, and Kes is like, the way her patterns of speech have totally changed. She's like running them through something that they've clearly drilled on, and up on the bridge, like, Harry Kim is explaining to everyone that a shuttlecraft has been beamed directly into space, and now Kes and their two guests are jaking that shuttle and heading out of here.
I think this is a good moment in the episode to discuss how little of this moment was telegraphed early on. Like, I really like that scene in the transporter room earlier where Kes is giving the tour. I really like how little we see of it, and how there's nothing suspicious at the time. Nor when Tyrion dies in sickbay, there's not that ECU on the hands touching and a weird look on Kes's face as the transfer happens. Like, none of this has been foreshadowed in a way that makes this moment very satisfying in its surprise.
Absolutely. Like, I think that the only thing that I can think of that seemed a little bit weird was the way Kes hugged Nori.
Yeah.
But it also, like, wasn't totally out of character for Kes in that moment. And you can come up with headcanon for why she would have done it. And yeah, like, there's episodes of TNG where, like, there's a disease going around and there's, like, a sound effect when the disease passes from person to person. And there was never anything that was like, oh, this guy is touching Kes in a weird way that is causing something to transfer to her. You never get anything. It comes as such a surprise, and it's such a fun moment to be like, holy shit, where are we headed? I did not see this coming.
It's really less is more throughout the episode in that way. And especially up until this point, a great choice.
Yeah, really, really good. And this shuttle goes to warp and is scattering its escape in a way that Voyager is left with its pants around its ankles. Like, they cannot figure out where they went or how to chase them.
Part of the effectiveness of the surprise is the transition between, like, gratitude and helplessness by these aliens to being one step ahead for basically the rest of the episode.
Totally.
Someone on that shuttle really knows what they're doing.
So on the bridge, Chakotay sort of reads the scoreboard, and it's 2 dead. The shuttle's gone. Janeway's injured in sickbay. And what's the MO? these guys been?
Their MO is that they're good. When she shot the Ilari representative, she went ahead and killed Ensign Martin, because at that point, what's the difference?
We cut over to the shuttle where, I mean, it is just bang, bang, bang for them. They are in motion. And Kes has beamed up Resh. And Resh is the person that gets the backstory that the viewer gets here too, right? Yeah. Kes explains her transformation into Tyrion to him.
I love that Resh like has never been transported and has no way of like anticipating that he's going to be transported. Yeah. So he beams up, like, clearly he was just walking somewhere and he's like, what the fuck?
Also, you could help Resh out by transporting him up facing forward instead of backward. Like, that's kind of a power move of a transport, right?
Yeah.
If you really want to get the upper hand early on, like, this is what they should do diplomatically. If you're in opposition to a species that you're having a hard time with, beam them into the transporter room facing the wall.
Yeah.
What is this?
The Darth Vader vibes when Tyrna Kes starts force choking Resh are pretty intense.
I never thought we'd see Kes freshen anyone up again, but here it is.
Yeah. And their loaf is like, they have like four extra nostrils on their nose loaf, yeah, and blood is coming out of all four of them on him.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
On Ilari, their CPAP machines are enormous.
they just go for the full face mask, you know,
yeah,
at that point.
This is a scene that teaches us just a whole bunch about how this transference works and how many of the Miriam Kes powers Tyrion has at their disposal while he inhabits Kes's body.
And that Tyrion has troops massing and like is prosecuting some kind of dastardly plan, which we need some more information on. So the captain convenes a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And they have Demis on board, who is the eldest son, the heir apparent to the Autarch, the leader of this planet. And he explains that Tyrion used to be the Autarch and he's a psycho and he, you know, he like won this big war, but then he was like really bad as Autarch when they were in peacetime. And Nori and Aiden are like political extremists who have been trying to reinstall him as Autarch. And he's pretty concerned because he thinks that this means that they're getting ready to move against the Autarch.
This idea that Tyrion has been obsessed with the idea of body jumping as a form of life extension is something that interests everyone, and maybe Neelix the most, because the big takeaway for Neelix here is that Kes didn't actually break up with him.
So he's been controlling her?
Yes. Completely.
Tyrna doesn't want to date you, Neelix. Kes didn't have anything to say about that. And can you blame Tyrna?
Right.
Because Fuwok's in the room for this.
Yeah.
I want him to say something about a Katra. Like, my people would call this, he put his Katra into Kes. If there was a Bajoran in the room, I would want them to say something about a Pa, you know? Like, this appears to be a mechanism that exists across multiple species in Star Trek. Is it all species? Is it the same mechanism? Or is it like a different kind of mechanism in different species?
It, like the idea of God having many names to many different civilizations. Like, it is all the same thing among all species, this idea?
Right. Feklar is Satan.
I think that's a good point. I also wondered in this scene if we are supposed to side with Demas at all, because like in every scene with him, I kind of got Failson vibes from him in a way that got me off of his side. Like, are we to root for him and the installation of him back at the head of the table for his government? I didn't really care.
Yeah. Your political leader is called Autarch, which already makes me think he's a bad person. You know,
I think one of the ways that we're not on his side from jump is that he's always campaigning for war. Like, he's on Voyager and he always wants to use Voyager's advanced weapons for his own purposes. And this is something that Janeway routinely pushes back on.
She also pushes back on it when he gives his condolences for Kes, because his position is that there's no way that you're going to get Kes back after what Tyrion did to her. So you might as well just make peace with that. And the captain is pretty quick to say, no, we're going to rescue her.
Yeah, I mean, plan A is unfreaky Friday-ing Kes. And right. Absent their ability to do that, then like shooting torpedoes is going to be plan B.
Coffee black. Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
So they're still in orbit of Illari, and they are like scanning the HQ of the castle, and it seems like the attack has already begun.
Didn't you like the energy of these crosscuts? Because like every time people on Voyager are just talking, Kes slash Tyrion is like on the move, shooting people and like making moves and flying the shuttle and doing all this shit. Like it really felt like the crew of the Voyager was just slow and bureaucratic and like just behind the whole time.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Shin Godzilla, the way like Godzilla is just like rampaging through the city and like the government is like, we need to convene several committees to talk about what's going on and come up with a plan. And it's like, are you fucking kidding?
Yeah.
He like stepped on a building. I also just think Jennifer Lean's performance, like there are many things about Jennifer Lean's performance in this episode that are really impressive. Like the like different energy that she draws on to perform Tyrion than what she draws on to perform Kes, but also like the way she does violence, like that snatching the phaser and killing people is so kinetic. It's like blink and you miss it. Like she moves so quickly and is really scary as this character.
I mean, the moment she steps to the president and shoots him point blank range really sets the tone. I wasn't aware that Tyrion would have this in her, but you see it go down and all of a sudden you understand the stakes for the rest of the episode. This could happen at any time.
The symbol of being the reigning autarch of this planet is to wear the neck brace of an ambulance chasing trial lawyer. So they take the neck brace off the corpse and Kes puts it on and she starts redecorating immediately.
You're going to want the talisman if you ever need to do a long transcontinental flight. Also, it's kind of nice to have.
Yeah.
Keeps your jaw from like slumping open when you fall asleep.
And like the pillow that they give you is just not going to cut it if you're trying to like lean against the window or whatever.
Yeah.
Come on.
Kes also gets a costume change into the garments of the Illari. Like it's a very like form-fitting leather slash Mirror Universe kind of vibe.
Yeah, she really looks like Mirror Universe Kira's couturier mate or something for this role.
I think that's an interesting comp to bring up because like Nana Visitor had a physical imposition as a Mirror Universe person that made you feel threatened, you know, physically and mentally, but Kes really doesn't have that physicality as someone who is as short in stature as she is. So she's got to make up for it with crazy.
There's a moment in this palace redecoration scene that I thought was really nice. Like we've talked about the subtlety that something was strange about Kes before the heel turn. And there is some subtlety to the idea that Kes might still be in there under Tyrion in this scene when she grabs a vase full of plants and is like getting ready to throw them away, and then it like kind of plays it off like she's giving a flower to Nori.
The flowers are still standing.
There's like a little glimmer of Kes's like established love of botany in that moment that is not heavy-handed at all, you know.
Right.
Nori is really worried because Nori was Tyrion's wife and the whole point for her was getting to be queen or whatever of the planet. And now that's impossible because Kes is a woman.
There is some really fun gender and sexual fluidity happening here. Like from this scene on until the end of the episode when Kes is inhabited by Tyrion. She is seductive of Nori, obviously, as someone that has been their partner before. But when they drag the younger son into the chamber, less than 5 minutes after watching his dad get murdered, there is like a sexual form of seduction happening here.
Yeah, she's really like pouring honey in his ear and like making the case that you could be on my team and stay comfortable and like treat your political outrage as just like a brief moment. But, you know, like if you join with me, you'll lend credibility to my claim on the throne. And this will be great for both of us. And the implication is also like, maybe we could go sailing sometime.
Oh, now she likes sailing?
Everything you want can be yours for the asking.
Back on Voyager, Damas has chosen to stay there. Great decision, Damas.
Yeah.
And given what we're seeing on the surface.
He's like, if you could set me up with quarters while I'm here. And the doctor's like, come on! I asked for quarters at the end of the last episode and you basically laughed in my face. You've known this guy for 30 seconds and he gets quarters? Are you kidding me?
He's telling Janeway and Tuvok that Tyrion has kind of assembled a quorum down there. Like, in very short order, he's put together supporters sufficient to overthrow his whole deal.
The coup goes well, Enterprise.
Yeah.
but not well for Damas, who should be Autark. Like, legally, he's saying legally, I am Autark now, but practically, Tyrion has all the power, so my claim on the throne gets weaker and less enforceable by the minute.
Is the Voyager a non-extradition ship?
I mean, it seems like it would be. Down in Six Bay, Doc Holliday explains the mechanism by which Tyrion transferred his consciousness into Kes. And it's very subtle. He had like a brain implant that at the moment of his death downloaded his mind, and then like it went down his arm and through the skin on the palm of his hand into her.
Yeah, the doc shoots a black light at his palm and it's just so gross. Oh. What he needs is one of those balls that they keep in the commissary for washing your hands.
Right, yeah. Looks like a episode of that MTV Room Invasion show. On the palm of his hand.
They speculate that like the first thing that Tyrion / Kes is going to want to do is set up another way to transfer his brains again. You know, should there be a threat to Kes Tyrion's life down there.
Right.
And if they did set up this sort of thing, they've got a way to destroy it by way of a clip show device.
One of those clip show devices that like magnetically sticks onto your head. And Tuvok is like, hey, I could just go like sneak in there and do it. Like the Death Star has great defenses for a Starfleet attacking it, but they seem to have overlooked the idea of a smaller ship.
Have you seen how the waiters dress down there? They're like wearing hoods. I could fit in there, no problem. It's way easier than 1997 Earth.
Right. I had to wear a hat to hide my pointy ears down there. It sucked.
Yeah, the thing that gives Tuvok away is the Jordans, though. Like he wore the same stuff that he wore down to L.A., but with the hood, and the Jordans gave him away.
So Janeway sends a single man behind enemy lines, and we also kind of come to understand in this scene that the headaches that Tyrion has been experiencing are Kes trying to fight back from inside, and we cut down to the palace where Aiden is finishing up installing a similar system in Kes, who has totally redecorated by this point. Like, there's a picture of OG Tyrion on the wall behind them, and we get the blacklight shot of Kes's hand, and it's no picnic.
And Aiden correctly suggests that Kes should maybe find a different body because this one isn't really working. What with all the headaches and everything?
And Tyrion is like, no fucking way. Like, this body has force choking. I wouldn't be able to get that in any other body. That's a unique feature.
Let me tell you something. When a person claims to have a headache when you suggest a sailing trip, Maybe don't pivot into some sort of body commentary at that point.
Yeah, come on, Aiden.
This doesn't go very well.
It's 2022. Get with the times, man.
You will not suggest it again.
Tyrion slash Kes takes great umbrage with the idea before convening kind of the first city hall meeting. Getting a bunch of shit done. You know, hitting the ground running politically here before she seized upon the feeling that there is a Tuvok in the room. There's an interloper there under one of these hoods, and she goes around the room taking the hoods off of people before Tuvok comes around a corner and attaches this device to her cheek, and you think it's going to work.
Yeah.
But it's not there long enough to work.
We didn't really get a sense of I wish they'd said, but it'll need to be on for at least 5 seconds or something like that. But it's on her and then off her in the next instant because one of the heavies snatches it and they grab Tuvok and looks like he's off to the Star Trek Caves Cum Dungeon. And just for the record, I didn't mean to say Cum Dungeon.
Well, yeah, Star Trek Caves Cum Dungeon is going to look really fun and descript.
I guess we know what's showing up on Out of Context Greatest Gen this week.
I've got to get that platinum, get that robe enlargement.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start, and these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scars. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off. Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give microdose gummies a try. So you get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVES. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVES for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVES.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
I've got to get that.
Not.
Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
So it seemed like Tuvok's plan was dog shit. And then I was like, oh, this was just a pretext for him to get into an interrogation context with Tyrion Kess so that he could mind meld her. So maybe it was actually an awesome plan. But then the mind meld doesn't work, so that winds up seeming like a bad plan, too.
I'll tell you why it didn't work, Ben. He goes in one-handed.
Yeah.
You gotta meld two-handed. If we know anything about how the meld works in Star Trek, that second hand does a lot.
Can make all the difference.
In just about every context, what the second hand is doing can really change the game.
But this does not work.
It momentarily does, because Tuvok gets to talk to Kes.
Yeah, she explains that she's down in there. She's trying to fight back. She can feel him struggling to keep her suppressed. So he's able to give her some words of encouragement, but then Tyrion like reasserts himself and KOs Tuvok, and we are back up to Voyager for another McLaughlin group.
Issue two.
This time, they're going on the offensive. It's Dustbuster Club time. A Dustbuster Club that Neelix asks to be a part of. And does not make a very strong case for at all, I thought.
You know, there are a lot of jobs that you want to have, like they want you to have experience for to get them. And people pad their resumes. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of arguments to be made for that being an okay thing to do in an unfair economic system like capitalism. And I think that that's a piece of the playbook that Neelix should have drawn on here, is make the case for yourself a little bit more forcefully, with a little bit more self-confidence, Neelix.
I wish this was a callback to the feet. Like, if there were something about Neelix's feet that were incredibly threatening and, like, velociraptor toe-like.
That lady wouldn't have wanted to give him a foot rub if he had velociraptor toes.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, the potential for him as a weapon, I think, would be more reasonable. But as it is, like, on the surface, I just see him... Like the prediction is he's going to get into a situation where he's negotiating with Tyrion and he gets himself killed.
Yeah. The captain agrees to this really quickly for some reason. And then they move on to just sort of the mechanics of the raid. And Kim is like, there's this force field, but we can knock it out with an EM pulse at this like particular moment. That should be no problem. And then we can start storming the compound.
When Kes breaks in with her FaceTime and basically takes apart that plan specifically, did you think it was because she was in someone's mind in that room and could, and like in a Locutus kind of way, knew the plan that was coming at her? Because I found it more than coincidental that she knew exactly what the weakness was that they were trying to exploit.
God, that's really interesting. But I also thought that this was such an interesting twist because Tyrion is being fairly reasonable here. It's like, I know that you're like pissed off that I stole this lady's body and killed what's his nose, but like, I also really appreciate that you saved my life and saved my friends. So like, why don't we just call this a draw and you can take that guy and get out of here? And like, I thought that was such an interesting moment. You know, it was an interesting thing to offer at this moment, I thought.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's got to be tempting, right? Like, oh, we could just not get in combat with this fucking planet? That'd be cool.
I mean, there's just nothing in Janeway's makeup that's going to allow her to let this go, though.
No.
So Kes threatens them with a deadline of 30 seconds before her warships will arrive on the scene. And it works.
Voyager bugs out.
Yeah. These headaches are really seizing upon Tyrion, and it's happening in public in a way that is concerning for everyone.
And Dr. Aiden is like, you got to like transfer yourself. You got to let me help you with this. And again, Tyrion Kess is like, you need to shut the fuck up about that. I'm sticking with this. And I don't sleep, because when I sleep, that's when I'm confronted by Kess. And pretty immediately, like, plops down in a chair and passes out.
I had wondered if we were ever going to get this scene, the scene of what it's like to have two people in one mind. And what we're given here compositionally is a room where half of it is this council chamber and the other half is a quarters in Voyager. And In the quarters is Kes, and in the council chamber is Tyrion. And when they fight and argue, the camera moves around them in such a way that gives us these different backgrounds.
This is an idea that Discovery did. I feel like maybe in season two, where like two characters were talking to each other in two different rooms, and they actually like comped the two rooms together.
Yeah.
But this was nicely done and really subtle, and a really intense one-on-one acting scene between Jennifer Lean and Kelsey Grammer's college roommate.
Boy, this guy's got all the Kelsey Grammer stories, I bet.
Oh, man.
Get this guy to a convention. Hey, not so much a question about your role of Tyrion in the Star Trek Voyager episode Warlord.
Or as your role as Jorin Dax in that one at DS9 episode. Really wanted to get down into some earlier phases of your career.
More of an experimental phase, if you will. What was Kelsey Grammer like as a roommate?
Did your character on Voyager have all those extra nostrils because you collapsed the ones that you were born with partying with Kelsey?
Do you still party?
I'm going to take my answer in room 1418, and I'm going to leave the door slightly ajar if anybody wants to come up and set it off.
Yeah, I'm going to take that like weird angled deadbolt thing that just looks like an L, and I'm gonna close the door on that, on the outside, though.
Get a life!
So Aiden wakes up Tyrion after this confrontation, and she, like an animal, you're not supposed to wake up an animal who's having a bad dream, and Kes just fucking freshens him up to death for waking her up.
Yeah, the doctor gets his ticket punched.
Kind of a growing body count here that is not referred to at the end of the episode.
The shot of the blood bubbling out of all these nose holes is so upsetting, too. Because it like pools in the actor's eyes.
Rusty pipes.
But this does not slow Tyrion Kes down. She's throwing like a big party the next day to announce her betrothal.
Yeah.
The Autark's second fail son, Amelon, will be her husband, which comes as a total shock to Nori, who did not get like any advance warning that this was about to go down.
And then to soften the blow is invited into kind of a throuple that she also didn't know was happening.
Listen, I'm open-minded, but like this is something you want to negotiate in private, you know, not in a party in front of your friends and family.
And this is not a great time for Voyager to have returned either, but that's what happened. Yeah. And Tyrion is so scatterbrained that they're ignoring the threats that the Voyager poses in favor of continuing the celebration and making weird proclamations.
Yeah, the guy that they beamed up to the shuttle before is like, hey, we should probably get to undisclosed location so that we're all safe from this attack. And Tyrion is just not about that. Wants to finish the big feast and keep enjoying things, and bangers start getting dropped. Tyrion becomes convinced that there are infiltrators in the room and starts going around tearing face coverings off of the guards and waiters, who are all Alari people.
Hey, guess what, Tyrion? Among all the proclamations you're making about there being war gardens in every yard or whatever, you could change the uniforms that your guard has to wear. Like, at any point, you could change it to a non-hood sort of dress code.
Yeah, have the ears at least be showing so that you could get a sense of...
Seems to be within your power.
Yeah.
Anyone who tries to leave this room will be shot as a traitor.
Down in the Star Trek caves, Tom Paris, for some reason, is the person that they sent to rescue Tuvok.
Mr. Paris.
Am I making any sense here?
By himself?
He has got a great big phaser rifle, though. When you got a phaser rifle that big, all you need is one Tom Paris.
Yeah, you really do. They get in a Star Trek fight with a couple of these guards in the Star Trek caves, and we cut back up to combat in the Great Hall, where the Voyager crew are the frontline soldiers in the assault on the royal family, and And Damas, I guess, is there with them.
This is what happens. Like, they lost their expendable crew person in the transporter room earlier. Like,
yeah, that was the one red shirt left on Voyager.
They had to bring their A-team down here this time.
This ends with a showdown where Neelix has a dustbuster on Tyrion slash Kes and is backing her into a corner and winds up having to stun her. Amelon attempts to rush to Kes's aid, but gets grabbed by his big brother. And Kes is brought back with the aid of the clip show device.
Yeah.
But she's like, bad news, guys. He's not dead. I wish I could tell you he was, but I'm feeling him somewhere in this room. And it turns out he's gone into Amelon. So they put the clip show device on Amelon, and I guess
Amelon's like, you're not going to wipe that thing off? Like, that was just on another person's face.
No, you can't do this.
This is a medical device.
I have very sensitive skin. You don't think that's going to break me out?
You can't just hot swap those. This is why they have needle exchanges for people to use intravenous drugs. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Here's a Star Trek rule. You never use a clip show device more than once.
I mean, but the oceans are filling up with single-use clip show devices.
You see turtles trying to swim around with them, like, hanging around their necks. It's really sad.
Crusted up around their shells. It's awful.
That's why I bring my own clip show device to a coffee shop. Like, use my own.
Hey, can you fill this up?
Yeah.
Sorry, health code. We can't do it. We can pour it into a paper cup and give that to you, and you could pour it in.
Yeah. Cool.
Really?
Good solution.
Yeah. So Tyrion is dead. Damas installed as the new leader of this planet. War averted. I'm not sure if I care. But they got Kes back, and that I care about.
God, that's just the thing, isn't it? So the button on the episode is a scene we've seen a lot over the years in Star Trek Voyager. It's Kes, and it's Tuvok, and they're doing meditation. And Kes is having a difficulty that if you're someone who meditates, can happen fairly often. It's like the intruding thoughts of the outside. She just can't get clear in this moment in a way that she's used to.
I just had to kill a lot of people.
You were not responsible for Tyrion's actions.
And Tuvok kind of encourages her to view this as a fresh start. You're not going to be able to forgive the lengthy body count that you have. You're going to run into people in the corridors, Kes, that knew the ensign that you murdered in the transporter room. You're just going to have to get over that along with everyone else.
They're going to give you, you're going to get a lot of hairy eyeballs from that guy's friends.
Yeah. And that's how we get to our three credits with a new start for Kes.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
I think this episode suffers from a lack of equivalence in, like, the two things we're supposed to care about. We are supposed to care about Kes, and we do, and I do. I care about her well-being, and I care about her rescue. But the whole government aspect to this, where we're supposed to care about reinstalling the toppled government in there for reasons that the fail sons are feebly able to articulate, like, that part falls apart. And while I have great respect for what Jennifer Lean brings to this, like, there are a number of episodes where cast members are asked to carry the entire thing.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of episodes where Roxanne Dawson has been made to do that several times. Jennifer Lean does.
Yeah.
And you could argue she has a more difficult task because in those episodes where Roxanne Dawson had to do it, she's playing two parts of the same personality.
Right.
Jennifer Lean is playing someone completely different and doing a very capable job in the process. And I think if you are to like the episode, you're going to have to get with, like, Jennifer Lean carrying it. And I do. But man, I wish that other half of things was a little more bulked up. I wish I cared a little more about that other thing we're supposed to care about, not just the one.
I think that's a good point. Like, there's a aspect of the political situation on Ellari that it is discomforting to a viewer because it seems like a bad government.
Yeah, it seems like the reinstallation of something that wasn't that great anyway.
Right. So like, I mean, Janeway says at one point, like, I think that, like, our needs are aligned because I'm just trying to save Kes. Like, I don't really give a shit what happens with your government, but it looks like saving Kes will involve getting you back on the throne, so like maybe we can help each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think that the way to enjoy this episode is to enjoy it as a, you know, as a sandbox for Jennifer Lean to do some really fun acting. And I did enjoy it in that way. Like it is a really weird episode. The like tone shifts between the Caribbean fuckfest the beginning, this like dark autocratic government on this fucked up planet, and the warlord inhabiting Kes's body. But I guess like overall I kind of thought it was successful despite that weirdness.
I thought the climax to the episode was really well done. When you're blocking action from a number of different characters doing things simultaneously, a whip pan is really useful. And especially if the direction is like telling Kate Mulgrew to do one thing, and then we've whipped into another area where Paris is doing another one thing, you're able to create sort of a compound kinetic energy to it that I thought was really effective. And by the time we've whipped all the way around back to Neelix, like it's a fairly exhausting moment to come to that moment. And I thought that point in particular was really well done. Give it up for the whip pan, Ben.
Yeah. Star Trek does not always have the greatest action scenes, but this one was really successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do you say we whip on over to the Priority One messages, Ben, and see if we've got anything in there that's action-packed?
Let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first Priority One message is of a promotional nature, Adam. It goes like this. Hey, friends of DeSoto. We're the Downs siblings, and we have a podcast you'll love. You know, two guys a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. Now try three siblings who should be very embarrassed to have a supernatural podcast. Three Idiots in a Pod is a sibling supernatural rewatch podcast.
Did you say a sibling supernatural?
I did. It's inspired by The Greatest Gen. Join us for 1% or silly audio drops as we learn podcasting and watch Supernatural with a cross-generational fan lens wherever you get your podcasts. LLAP FODs. So search for Three Idiots in a Pod wherever you get your podcasts and leave them a 5-star rating and review on iTunes as it helps others find them. Thank you.
Boy, when you make Supernatural the source of your rewatch podcast and you recognize that that is a show with 15 seasons, 327 episodes, that is like one of the longest running shows on TV ever.
Wow. I did not realize that.
Yeah. And a super popular show.
The only reason we have any success is that, that we're reviewing a super popular show. So, yeah.
Very cool. Ben, our second message is from Danilist. It is to Bobby. And the message goes like this. Thanks for introducing me to this great podcast. I owe you for the many hours of laughing and embracing the nerdiness I always had. Of course, also thanks to Adam and Ben for the pod.
Thanks, Danilist. And thanks, Bobby, for spreading the good word.
Yeah, Bobby's doing the good work out there. Bobby's supporting the show by recommending us to other people.
Yeah, I hope Danilist gave Bobby $100 also.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Our last P1 here is from Kyle and Nancy, and it's to the Kyle and Nancy who had a P1 on the October 24th, 2021 episode of TGG. Goes like this. Who are you? Are you our transporter clones or our mirror universe doubles? Kyle is the same age as you, and your P1 was read right after our anniversary weekend. Anyway, we should probably meet so we can either fight to the death or determine which Kyle and Nancy needs to change their names. I guess Kyle is the one sending this, so find me on the Drunk Shimoda Discord. I am at KAGE23 hashtag 1701.
Wow. So there can be only one Kyle and Nancy, according to this Kyle and Nancy.
Yeah. What Kyle and Nancy don't realize is that the other Kyle and Nancy are trained killers.
We're choosing to believe this is not a message of a threatening nature, which ordinarily we would not read on the show.
Right.
Maybe it's playful threatening.
Yeah.
The kind that we like.
Yeah. Thanks to everyone who got a P1 this week. We really appreciate it. And if you listening out there would like to get one, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and get it set up today.
We hear all the time about how we are like changing people's small business or podcasts with our reading of them. Like,
for the worse.
It's kind of amazing to get the feedback about those things. And those that do the promotional P1s on our show, like, really do get an effect from that. So if you're...
As shocking as that is, it has actually... has actually borne fruit for some people.
If you're a business that's too small to do an actual advertisement, like if you're that kind of small business, a P1 might be for you. So consider it.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
Yeah, this is an off-screen drunk Shimoda this week. I'm going to give it to the cam op that had to do these zooms on Neelix's feet. On today's episode.
Oh, no.
That's a slow zoom in on Neelix's foot to theme is just a pretty insane composition choice.
It's a strong choice.
Yeah, whoever made the call, I don't know if it was the director of photography or the director or whatever, but, you know, who knows?
I want to see Neelix's foot up on the foot clinic sign. In Echo Park, like that's the graphic I want to see.
Mm. Yeah, happy Talaxian foot, sad Talaxian foot.
Yeah, exactly. Talaxian foot on crutches. Talaxian foot jumping for joy. Yeah.
Hey, local Talaxian foot jokes get you local Talaxian foot work, Adam.
That's right.
How about yourself? Did you find a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
Everything about Resh really appealed to me as a Shimoda. From being beamed aboard the shuttle backwards to pushing back with some force on Tyrion, like, all of his gripes made a lot of sense. In the end, Res was right about all of it. He got
really
freshened
was.
Up a little bit, which made me sad. I didn't like that, but like every moment that Res was on screen, and this is Charles Emmett playing him, I really, really dug his deal. Big fan.
Charles Emmett, also just a really busy actor, like,
has
been working for a long time, still out there doing a lot. And,
a real that guy of your actors out there.
It was really fun to see him.
Yeah.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Really fun to see where we are on the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because next week we'll be watching Season 3, Episode 11, The Q and the Grey. Voyager encounters several supernovae in a small region of space. Q soon appears and reveals that they are the after effects of a civil war within the Q continuum.
How about that?
Big shit poppin' in the Q continuum.
I remember watching in middle school the Ken Burns documentary of the Q Civil War, and really amazing, really great work. I mean, Ken Burns does it again.
My dearest Ida, the war has been going on. Well, we don't really consider time in the same way that you do. You would not understand.
I keep snapping my fingers, and more people die.
Adam, the runabout is currently on square 40 on the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker. We are within range of a Coco No-No if we hit a 6. I texted you before the program today to suggest we Coco No-No this one because of what Neelix had going on in the holodeck.
Yeah.
But you just laughed at me, so we didn't do it.
Yeah, another text unreplied to.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
But maybe next week will be our lucky week. Who knows?
How about that? I like your chances. Yours more than mine, anyway.
Oh, not even close, Adam. I rolled a 1.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Which puts us on square 41.
A 1? What are you doing, man?
I'm kind of biting your rhyme.
What is that?
It's just a regular episode next week. I'm sorry.
I'm sure we can find a way to make it fun.
Okay, maybe.
I like Q Anyways. Episodes. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it'll be fun. In the meantime, we got to thank all the friends of DeSoto who support our work at MaximumFun.org/join. We got to thank Wendy Pretty, the producer of this program. And we got to thank Bill Tilly, the card daddy, who runs our social media at Greatest Trek on Instagram and Twitter. Real fun follows. Follow us on the social medias.
Yeah, you got to do that. I mean, I don't want to say that as a friend of DeSoto, your job is incomplete if you don't. But there are a lot of friends of DeSoto out there for you to meet, and the way to do it is getting out there on the social medias. Using the hashtag GreatestGen, perhaps?
Gotta do it.
That'll get their attention.
Also follow Adam Ragusea on YouTube. He's a chef on YouTube, but in the podcast realm, he's a great musician. He made all of our custom theme music. Of course, following in the footsteps of Dark Materia, who made the original Picard sounds.
Yeah, Dark Materia also made a very popular YouTube cooking channel. It's weird, like, how many things Adam Ragusea is following in the footsteps of.
Yeah, yeah. What's that about, man?
Yeah, kind of a weird obsession, if you ask me.
Well, with that, we'll be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager, where we break into weird epistolary southern accents pretty often.
Oh, this is what we do best.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.